respectful, or someone who offers respect to others. He gives honor to others. Mana, da. Da means to give, and mana means honor. So someone who's giving honor to others, he's respectful. And the whole Trinadapi Sunichena Shloka emphasizes, at least this is one of the characteristic traits of a true Vaishnava, that Vaishnavas offer respect to all living entities because they see that in the body of every living entity is the soul and the supersoul. The supersoul is certainly worthy of all respect because he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the individual soul is worthy of respect because in his pure state, he's an eternal servant of Krishna. So, however advanced a Vaishnav may be, or even if someone may not be a Vaishnav, for these reasons we should offer them respect. And then in the Upadeshamrita Shloka, Krishnete Yasya Giritan, then Rupa Goswami shows that respect should be given to all devotees, but according to their advancement it should be given more, and so on. So we may offer all respect to someone within our mind, we may offer respect to someone with our words, and we may offer respect to someone with our whole being. And along with offering all respect to others, the converse is there, is that one does not expect any respect from others. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told this to Raghunath Das Goswami when he was instructing him about the duties of a sannyasi. He said, don't expect any honor, but offer all respect to others. So we should practice this principle very seriously, because if we don't, then our tendency will be to commit offenses. Manada, we should always offer respect to others, and we may offer to different degree, but we should always be respectful. Because by doing so, one helps purify the heart from envy of other living entities. And when a devotee is fully free from envy, then naturally he's very, very respectful. So the symptom of advanced devotees is not that they look down on others or that they're very proud, but that they're always very respectful, whoever it may be that they are speaking to. And if devotees, on the other hand, don't practice this principle of manada, then they won't be able to advance in Krishna consciousness. Why? What will happen? Kirtaniya Shadahari. You cannot chant Hare Krishna properly without offense unless you cultivate this quality. And if you're not able to chant Hare Krishna properly, then certainly you won't be able to do what you're supposed to be doing when you're chanting Hare Krishna, which is to, in your mind, always render to Krishna service to Krishna in Vrindavan. The mind of an envious person is always disturbed, so he can't fix his mind on Krishna. So going back to, I'm just looking here at what Lord Chaitanya told Raghunath Das Goswami. He says, do not expect honor, but offer all respects to others. Always chant the holy name of Lord Krishna, and within your mind render service to Radha and Krishna in Vrindavan. So you can see from this instruction that Lord Chaitanya is connecting this principle of not expecting honor and giving respect to others with chanting Hare Krishna and being able to think about Krishna. Anyone have any questions about this?
I'm here.
There was one question from Krishna Priya. She was asking, she was saying that, does it mean what you said, does it mean that the respectlessness is the envy is the only reason of respectlessness.
There may be other reasons, but it's certainly a sign of envy. One may not show respect to someone else because he's ignorant of proper conduct, but the reason that ignorance is there is because of his envy also. Something else?
Off topic.
Okay, so we're...
Shall we read them?
Then we're finished with Manada.
More about the same question. So if we're not chanting properly, Hare Krishna properly, is envy also the reason of our not proper chanting of Hare Krishna?
We have to examine our hearts and see. We should look objectively. It may be that we're actually envious of others. Of course, envy is very deep-seated, and it may not be directly visible, but it may come through other things, like ignorance. Okay. So let's go on to some other questions.
There is a question from Krishna Priya. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that the mind can be either a friend or an enemy of the soul. But Lord Shabadev in Srimad Bhagavatam says that one should never trust his mind. So doesn't mean that the mind can never be a friend to the soul. How shall I understand this point?
You know, it's a question of purification of the heart. A devotee who's under the modes of material nature will never trust his mind, even though at certain times or increasingly in his Krishna consciousness, his mind will help him become Krishna conscious. And the reason he doesn't trust his mind is because he's under the modes of material nature. The mind still may carry him away, and therefore he can't give full faith and trust in it. In other words, the instructions of the mind for the conditioned soul are not a guarantee of reliable guidance. However, a liberated soul is beyond the modes of material nature, and his mind is fully purified and is simply helping him serve Krishna. So there's no question of a liberated soul's mind tricking him. But because liberated souls also behave like practicing devotees, therefore they also speak and behave apparently in the same way as practicing devotees, so they express this, that they don't trust their minds. But a devotee who's transcendentally situated, his mind, his senses, his intelligence, they're all absorbed in transcendence, and by nature, therefore, they cannot lead him in the wrong direction. They're leading him to Krishna. Anyway, but because he's in this world, he always speaks like that. And so that's why we see that instruction from Lord Rishabdev. So Krishna's instruction is the overall picture. Mind can be enemy, mind can be the friend. But even if your mind is the friend, for a person who's so lucky, still he behaves as if it is also not reliable. Is that okay?
Broke his silence, although he had been abused and beaten before meeting Rahugana Maharaj.
Because if Jad Bharat didn't speak to Maharaj Rahugana, then we'd be out a couple of chapters of Srimad Bhagavatam. And so that was very important to hear his instructions. So according to Krishna's instruction, Jad Bharat didn't speak when it was not necessary, but when it was necessary for the sake of our benefit, then he spoke to Maharaj Rahugana. And you can also see that Jad Bharat also spoke to Maharaj Rahugana because he saw in him the potential of a Vaishnava. Whereas the other people that he had met, that wasn't there, therefore he didn't speak. So we generally speak to anyone who will speak to us. We will speak Krishna consciousness to them. But some people will not just speak to anyone, they will only speak to a few people who they think are qualified. Or in those souls who they see some for potential for Krishna consciousness, or souls that they think that Krishna has specifically sent to them for guidance. Another question?
It says in his books that if a man is able to maintain more than one wife, he may accept more wives. But did he approve such practice for his devotees?
Ramya, does your husband want any more wives? Anyway, she's not answering.
No.
I thought you were having to contribute to the maintenance as it is. In general, that's a acceptable principle. If a man can really maintain more than one wife, then he can have more than one. Maintain doesn't mean he's only supposed to feed them, and that's sufficient. It would mean that he's such a broad-minded, magnanimous soul that even if he has more than one wife, the wives won't be envious of each other, and they'll be completely satisfied. But such men don't really exist in this day and age. Even in the beginning of the last century, or even in the last century in India, there were men with multiple wives. The practice goes on in Muslim countries, and it also goes on in India, not in cities, but more out in villages. But it's something that will decrease, at least the legal exercise of this practice will decrease more and more, because men are not able to maintain even one wife, what to speak of more than one. And then Srila Prabhupada had actually had us pass a GBC resolution back in 1974, 1975, where he made it very clear that in ISKCON, the polygamy is not allowed. Generally, people have so little concept of how to work within the laws of Dharma that they're not able to fulfill the duties of a grihastha, even in relationship to one wife and even maybe a few children. So Krishna says, Swadharma, everyone has to act according to their dharma, everyone must be dharmic. And if you're not dharmic with one wife, then certainly you'll become very adharmic if you accept another one and just compound your defects. Anyway, in short, although we understand that in principle that's fine, but it's something that we no longer practice in this age. So in ISKCON we don't have polygamy. We're very happy if we see the example in Grihastha Ashram, where one man lives very nicely with one wife and has a very happy family with their children. That we consider to be a great achievement. Okay, now look, here's a question as to when to have the next conference. My plans for Kartik, I'm here in Hungary at Kartik. I have a GBC meeting to go to, but I just go to Bombay for 1 week and come back, that's all. But now I'm supposed to talk to Govinda Maharaj at 6 o'clock my time, and Niranjan Swami Maharaj, he wants to talk to Rajarenu for a minute also, so we should make time for our next meeting. No, because next week I go on Padayatra, and there's no question that I'm going to be on the internet on Padayatra, but we could I'm back on next Friday. I'm back in Budapest, so we could do it at that time. Is that okay? I'm the same time is fine, 5 p.m.
No
okay, so that's the time.